Hello? Yeah, it's working.
Mm.
I'm going to turn this off. So, my friend Terrence, who lives... Uh-oh, that looks bad. Printing.
Oh.
Not so good. Oh, no. I wonder if that phone number... Oh, my God, it's terrible.
Oh, what?
I should have checked this before. That's for you. And this is for me. We might have to look a little bit online.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Terrence, who lives in France,
mm-hmm.
he sent this to me. And I started looking at it, reading it, and I thought, uh-oh, I should read this with my student instead of just by myself. Translation's not perfect because I see like there's like this here, there's a two in the middle. I think this is probably been OCR'd. You know OCR?
No.
OCR stands for optical character recognition. So what that is like you take a photograph or scan something and the computer tries to guess what the letter is.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when we see it right here, if one makes a parody of it and says L apostrophe I D E 2 E. This is French, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's guessing wrong about what that word is. So we'll have a few of those in here and there. And there's a few like bad translations I noticed at the beginning. But I started to get the gist. You know that vocab word, gist? J I S T. It's kind of like the basic idea. And then what you, J I S T. So you would say, I got the gist. Basically, after that point, after you get the gist, you don't have to be explained anymore.
Mm.
Like, for example, I give you a chance to play some game I'm playing that I love. I say, what you need to do is put your character in that little box at the top of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, looks pretty fun, right? And you're like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, yeah, I'm going to just play for another 15 minutes and you can watch me. And you say, no. And you grab the thing out of my hand and say, I got the gist.
Okay.
Basic idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I got the gist of this. And then I thought, oh, this would be good for reading with my student. And Kezia, that's my student today.
Hello.
Hi, Terrence. All right, here we go. So there's it starts with a quote from Aristophanes, who was a playwright from ancient Greece. I want to say 2,000 years ago, but it's, I don't know exactly.
Okay.
It's more than 2,000 years ago, but not way more. Maybe 2,200 years ago. It gets longer and longer every day. And then Clouds is the name of the play.
Oh, it's a play?
Yeah, he's a playwright from 2,000 years ago. Ah, this is not a play. This is a quote from the play before this thing.
Okay.
And then it says, so there's a character, I guess it says, but where on the map is Sparta? Sparta is a city in Greece.
Greece, okay.
This famous city.
Mm-hmm.
What's the pupil?
You
know that vocab word?
The eye.
And also?
Oh, no.
You. You're a pupil.
Oh, really?
What's a pupil?
People?
Yeah. Student.
Student? Okay.
Yeah. So this guy says, but where on the map is Sparta? And pupil says,
where is it?
Hoppostin? Whatever that is.
Oh, over here.
Strepsiades says, so close? You'd better think about that some more and move them a whole lot farther away from us. So Aristophanes was writing about a guy in the city of Athens. And Athens is another Greek city. It's the most famous one today,
mm-hmm.
maybe. And there's another city in Greece called Sparta, and they were enemies.
Oh, what?
Well, at that time, it wasn't a country exactly like we think of.
Oh.
It was a whole bunch of cities, and each city was its own country.
Oh, it's like Korea.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I guess Korea's divided up still, but we don't... Maybe all of South Korea is just one big suburb of Seoul. What do you think?
Mm.
Almost, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So He's saying, it's kind of a joke, right? Where is this city? And he says, mm-hmm. It's here. And he's looking at the map. And he says, they're that close? You should move them farther away. Kind of a joke.
Enemy?
Yeah, because they're dangerous, right? Okay. And what's the title of this essay?
On the gradual formation of thought and the process of speech.
Right. So, I think this is probably true. That when you want to know what you think, mm-hmm. you have to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And gradual means over time, not sudden, right? And then it says translated.
Mm-hmm. Read. Oh, translated in the evening of January 14, 1996 in
Oslo, which is Oslo? In Scandinavia.
Scandinavia?
Northern Europe.
Oh, okay. By Christo.
Harbsmeyer?
Harbsmeyer.
And so that's the translator. And the original guy was a guy named Heinrich von Kleist.
Oh.
This is a very German-sounding name. And then translator note.
Oh.
You read.
This translation is based on
Heinrich.
Heinrich von Kleist?
Dirk.
Over in
Einem?
Einem van...
Munich. It's a city in Germany. Karl Hanser, 1966, pages 810 to 814. Über, that means above in German. Das Verfertigen der Gedanken beim Reden. So that's the work it's from, I guess. Heinrich von Kleist, the distinguished dramatist. Maybe this is the title. Über, So that's probably... This is the translation of that.
Oh.
Heinrich von Kleist, the distinguished dramatist, that would be a person who writes plays or whatever, committed suicide in 1811.
Why?
Well, let's find out. 34 years old. Keep going.
Oh. In poverty and in deep despair over his failure to win public recognition.
Mm-hmm.
For his work, especially from powerful men like
Johann Wolfgang
von
Goethe, something like that.
Okay.
Who's a famous German guy.
Mm-hmm.
The present piece, that means the thing we're reading,
mm-hmm.
was probably written for the Berlin journal Phobos. That looks like the vocab word for fear.
Mm-hmm.
Phobia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which Heinrich von Kleist edited. Well, that means he was the guy who ran the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
From 1808 to February 1909. This the piece was first published in 1876, so way after his death, right?
Yeah.
It was 67 years after, right there, 67 years after his death.
Oh, yeah.
On the basis of a copyist manuscript. Copyist is a person who...
copy
from one to the other before photocopy, which was corrected throughout in Kleist's hand. So he fixed somebody's copy of his essay.
Oh, okay.
The paragraphing in the manuscript, by the way, the word manuscript
mm-hmm.
means handwritten document. Manual
mm-hmm.
is for hand, like manual labor.
Mm-hmm.
I fixed it manually. It means I fixed it with my hand. And then script means writing.
Oh.
Is not the paragraphing in the manuscript is not Kleist's own, but that of the copyist. The paragraph division in this translation are those of the translator. The precise date of Kleist's composition, that means essay basically,
mm-hmm.
is uncertain. He considered the work as unfinished. So that's all the meta stuff, the stuff telling us about where this came from, who wrote it, what language it was originally in. Now we get the essay proper. You read.
My dear thoughtful friend, if there is something you want to know without being able to find it out through meditation, turn to any
acquaintance
you run into to talk about the matter.
So an acquaintance is somebody you know, but not necessarily your friend.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
When I say, who's that? And you say, oh, that's Jimmy. And I said, what's his last name? And you say, I don't know, but he's Jimmy. I met him once. He is my acquaintance. Right? Maybe you have to know somebody's middle name to be more than acquaintance. I'm not sure. Meditation here means thinking. So I'm going to read that one more time. My dear thoughtful friend, if there's something you want to know without being able to find it out through meditation, turn to any acquaintance you run into to talk about the matter.
Okay.
You want to find something out, and you can't figure it out just through thinking, talk to somebody. Keep going.
There is no need for him to be a sharp mind.
He doesn't have to be smart.
Also, I don't mean to say that you should ask him about this matter. Oh, no, never. Rather, you should tell him the solution yourself. I can see you making big eyes and telling me that you have been advised earlier to speak of nothing except of what you understand. Do I keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. But at that time, you may have had the mad ambition to instruct others. But I want to tell him, so you instruct yourself.
But I want you to tell him.
Oh, to him, so you instruct yourself.
That's a funny sentence. Ooh, notice no capitalization. Yeah. This needs correction. But I want you to tell him, so you instruct yourself. Instruct could be like tell or teach. And then?
In that way, perhaps both these
prudential
rules may be found to be
reconcilable,
each applying to its own cases.
So this is a little bit complex at the end, but he's writing this to us, right? Which is funny because we're long alive after he's long dead, right? Born, 200 years? Yeah. Is that right? Wow. Yeah. So, I'm going to rewind. He doesn't need to be smart. There is no need for him to be a sharp mind. Also, I do not mean to say that you should ask him about this matter being the thing you want to know about. So, for example, he say, is abortion good or bad? Right? How do you find out the truth? Or how do you find out what you think? You just go sit in a room by yourself and go, I wonder what it is. Like that, or you just find any random person and say, you know what abortion is? It's when a woman doesn't want to have a baby and she said, I'm having none of this. Right?
Yeah.
That's how you find out what you think.
Tell
somebody.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
I agree too. Yeah. So let's just read that again. Oh, no, never. Rather, you should tell him the solution yourself. Like, here's my bad idea. I can see you making big eyes. I like that. And telling me that you have been advised earlier to speak of nothing except what you understand. Don't talk about anything you don't know anything about.
What?
That's what that means, right?
Oh, okay.
But at that time, you may have had the mad ambition to instruct others, to teach people. But I want you to tell him, that is the random person you stopped on the street who you barely know, so as you instruct yourself. In that way, perhaps both these prudential rules. Now, prudential means like being careful, not spending too much money, or being wise.
No, being wise.
Yeah. May be found to be reconcilable. Now, that means... is two people are like fighting with each other. You say, stop fighting. Why don't you reconcile? It means get your alignment so you don't disagree so much. Each applying to its own cases. So if you want to speak, if you want to speak about something, to tell people about something, you need to speak to somebody to find out what you think. Clever, right? And then we get a new tiny paragraph with lots of French in it.
Oh, yeah.
The French say l'appetit, that means the appetite. Oh. Viens, I don't know. Et mangeons. Mange is French for eat. I think this probably translates to something like your appetite, which is the desire to eat, is whetted by eating. Now, what is? You take a knife and you sharpen it. W-H-E-T-T is to sharpen a knife.
Oh,
okay. So this is your appetite.
Okay.
How do you make the knife sharp? Put food on it.
Oh, okay.
How do I make you want to eat? I present you with food and you say, I'm not hungry. And then you, like that. It's funny French saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably true, though.
Yeah.
The French say, la petite viande est mangeante. And this empirical maxim, a maxim is like a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Empirical, this vocab word, means tested by experience. Yeah. Now, there's two kinds of people in the universe. One of my old philosophy instructors told me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, there's two kinds of people in the universe, Jesse. There's rationalists and there's empiricists.
What's a rationalist and empiricist?
A rationalist is a person who thinks they can figure out everything in the whole universe just by thinking about it.
That's not me.
I don't think they're good people myself. Mm-hmm. Rationalists. Now, the problem is maybe they don't exist. That might be the real problem. And then the other kinds of people are empiricists. Empiricist. This doesn't have to do with empire exactly. It has to do with experience. So the reason you don't put your head in the oven is because it's hot. Sometime as a baby, you learned that hot things hurt.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe you ate some food that was too hot.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That was yesterday.
And then you learn better, right?
Yeah.
Rationalists don't have to experience this. They just know.
Okay.
Now, the thing is there is actually, like, some stuff that babies know before they're born.
Mm-hmm.
They just come out and they suddenly know stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get a baby. And you put, even, let's make it safer. We'll get a puppy.
Okay.
We'll get a puppy. Just came out of its mom. The mom finishes cleaning it by licking all the blood and stuff off.
Okay.
And then what's the puppy want to do?
Sleep?
Well, yeah, that too. But drink.
Oh, okay.
And so you put the puppy near the mom's boobie, except they're not called boobie. They're called dugs on dogs. Dugs. And what does the puppy do? Starts drinking.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be taught to drink.
Oh.
It just knows.
Yeah.
Right? And my mom had a baby bull born recently. It was walking the first day.
What?
It didn't have to learn to walk. It just had to stretch its legs and it was walking around.
Really?
Right?
That's lucky.
Well, it's sort of programmed. Right?
True.
So rationalists are the maybe non-existent people think we could figure out everything just by thinking about it.
Okay.
And the empiricists are the guys who think that's not enough, that we have to test things out.
Mm.
Now, my old philosophy instructor, he said, Jesse, rationalists are all good and nice people and everything, but I wouldn't let one marry my daughter.
Oh, what? So they're bad.
Because they're crazy somehow.
Oh, okay.
Right? They're going to get his daughter to trouble somehow.
Oh.
I think of math as almost always being very rationalistic.
Mm.
Because it's all about thinking. It isn't about comparing things to the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, if we're at a dinner table and there's a pizza and we haven't cut it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I want some pizza, you want some pizza.
Mm-hmm.
A rationalist might get out a calculator and start doing pi r squared to figure out how many pieces to divide to get the perfect number. Whereas I'd probably just get the knife and cut it in half. And if it doesn't look right, I cut another piece off and I give you some.
Yeah.
Right? And if you don't like it, you can hit me or steal my pizza away. And we learn by experience.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'm not being very fair to empiricists or rationalists.
All do the same.
Huh?
I think I'll do the same.
Yeah, I don't think rationalists, they might not exist.
Mm.
Let's continue. The French say la petite viande est mangeante, and this empirical maxim remains true if one makes a parody of it and says l'idée viande est parlante. I don't know what this l'idée. Oh, the idea, right?
Oh, is it?
So viande would be like grows, maybe, from parlant. And parlez-vous means can you speak?
Can I say,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you take any French?
Me, no. I forgot everything.
Je parle français un peu. I speak a little French. Peu being small. I can't spell peu.
What? You can say it.
I can say it, but I can't spell it.
Oh, wow.
French spelling is hard.
Yeah.
All right. You go.
Often I sit over my papers and I try to find out from what angle a given conflict has to be judged. Usually I look into the light as the brightest spot I can find, and I try to
enlighten
my inner being.
This is funny because light is being used as a metaphor, which means you can't read in the dark, right? So you put on a light, now you can read. You are enlightened. You can now read the book. So now you know what's in the book. That makes you smart. Therefore, you are enlightened.
Oh, okay.
A blind person can't read a piece of paper unless it has like little bumps on it, right?
Yeah.
I can't read that piece of paper unless I'm trained to read the little bumps, even if you put light on it. So it's a metaphor, right?
Okay.
To be enlightened is to learn stuff or know stuff.
Okay.
So he says, usually I look into the light as the brightest spot I can find as I try to enlighten my inner being.
Oh, okay.
Keep going.
Or else I seek out the first approach, the first equation, which expresses the obtaining relations, and from which the solutions may be, or may be driven simply
derived
simply through plain
arithmetic.
Arithmetic.
You know arithmetic?
No.
That's math.
Oh.
Simple math, like pluses and minuses.
Oh, okay.
I use simple math every day, usually to calculate years. Like
years?
I say,
oh, I use it this year.
No, not years. That's harder. Years. So, like earlier today, I looked at when a magazine was published. It was 1946. And then I looked at what year it is this year, 2023, and then I subtracted.
Oh.
And it was, I think, 77 years. Don't check me on my math, please. But that is a simple way of being enlightened, right? So you take this number, 1946, and you put 2023 above it. And then you subtract 23 from 6, which gets us what?
I have no idea.
Me either. I'm going to write 77 and assume I'm right, okay?
Okay.
But 20 minus 19 is 1. But this isn't exactly, right?
Yeah.
And so we have, it's going to be 19 and then something here. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So let's pretend that we're doing math and we're getting the right answer of 77. That's rationalism. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
Because we're not actually counting the years or experiencing the years. I'm just looking at the date of 1946 and looking at the date 2023, and then I say math should tell me the answer, and I go on the internet and hit the calculator thing, tap, and it says me this, and then I believe it because I trust the calculator.
Does
that make sense?
Okay,
so he says, or else I seek through out the first approach, the first equation, you know what an equation is, which expresses the obtaining. Obtain means get. I obtained this at the store. You obtained that at Starbucks. Yeah? The obtaining relations. And that's a little bit confusing. Relationships, maybe? And from which the solution may be derived, that is, calculated or gotten, simply through plain arithmetic. So he's saying, like, maybe I should just be able to do it like this, like math. And look what happens. As soon as I talk to my sister, who is sitting and working behind me, about this matter, I realize what hours of hard thinking had not been able to make clear to me. It isn't as if she was telling me in any direct sense. She does not know the law and has... now we have a missing sentence. Something studied her... something her... something. Neither is what she... leads me to the crucial point through deft questions. This is a good vocab word, deft. It means like skillful.
Skillful?
Yeah, so if you're really good at playing guitar, we'd say you're a deft guitar player. And if you can't hear, we would say you're a deaf guitar player. Hey, come on, that's a good joke. If you're skillful, you're deft. Okay. And if you can't hear, what, then you're deaf. Come on.
Like,
thank you. Although this latter case, whatever case is situation, may occasionally occur. But since I have... Keep going.
But since I have some...
Vague
thoughts that are in some way connected with what I'm looking for. That once I have embarked...
That means started.
On the formulation of the thought, it is as if the need to lead what has been begun to some conclusion. Okay. Conclusion transformed Benny
my
hazy imaginations into complete clarity in such a way that my insight is completed together with my
rambling
sentence.
All right, so I'm going to go back to the beginning of that massive sentence, and we'll look at it again. But since I have some vague, we've done this word before, but I bet you don't remember it.
Mm.
Do you?
Vague
means unclear.
Mm.
So, where did you buy it, Jesse? You said you bought it at a store. You know, it was over there, near Port Coquitlam, right?
Okay.
It's not the name of the store, is it? It's unclear. What are you going to do this weekend? Oh, I'm going to have fun. Is that clear?
No.
I'm going to play 16 games of PUBG, and then that's very clear, right? Okay, so, but since I have some vague thoughts that are in some way connected with what I'm looking for, then once I have embarked, now this, I told you, means started.
Yeah.
But it's actually a metaphor, and I love this metaphor. Yeah. When I learned it, it made me so happy. EM means... make.
Mm-hmm.
And bark, B-A-R-K, is not just the sound a dog makes. It's also another word for a ship.
Ship.
So,
making ship.
Mm. What is making ship? It means getting on a ship.
Oh.
Why do you get on a ship?
To
start a trip.
Oh.
So, when I say we embarked on a journey, means we started our journey.
Oh.
Even if we don't actually go on a ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it means starting, like, as in formally climbing on board a ship.
Oh.
They don't say it when you get on the bus. They don't say, please embark. But when you are going on a ship,
mm-hmm.
like, have you been to Vancouver Island?
Oh, no, not yet.
Oh, you should go.
I should.
It's expensive, but it's worth it. Because you get to go on the water.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you go by ship.
Oh, yeah.
The ferry, when you're getting on... They say, we are embarking,
mm-hmm.
which means we are loading passengers.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the ship's getting close to where it's going to dock, they say, prepare for disembarking.
Oh.
What's disembarking?
Getting out.
Getting off the ship.
Yeah.
So to bark is to get on the ship. To embark is to make ship. Mm-hmm. And disembark is get off the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I read that one more time. But since I have some vague thoughts that are in some way connected with what I am looking for, then once I have embarked on the formulation of the thought, it is as if the need to lead what has been begun to some conclusion. this is translation, not so good. From some conclusion transforms my hazy. Now, this vocab word is a word by itself, but it's related to the word haze, H-A-Z-E,
mm-hmm.
which is another word for smog. You know smog?
No.
S-M-O-G. You know clouds, right?
Yeah.
When clouds are near the ground, what do we call them?
Near the ground?
Yeah.
Oh,
It's so blanky today.
Yeah, I know.
Foggy.
Yeah, fog, yeah.
Fog. A cloud that comes down to earth and is sitting near the earth is just fog.
Mm.
Fogs that go up are clouds. But when the sky is covered in clouds, so you can't see any blue at all, it's hazy.
It's hazy, oh.
And if there's a lot of smoke in the air, it's very hazy.
Oh, okay.
Right? So haze is kind of a similar thing to vague, as it it both also means unclear.
Oh.
Right? And then, where's the opposite vocab word? Oh, yeah. If the need to lead what has become to some conclusion transforms my hazy imagination into complete clarity. And clarity is clearness.
Oh.
In such a way that my insight, that is, thing I discovered, is completed together with my rambling sentence. A sentence that rambles goes all over the place and then looks really bad, and then we have to fix it up, putting commas and periods and breaking it into two sentences. But that's actually how we talk, right?
Really?
Think about this. When I'm talking to you right now, do I put any punctuation in?
No.
If I did, I would say question mark at the end. We sometimes will start a sentence with somebody's name. Kezia, that looks like a delicious drink.
Yay.
But if I was writing that, I would have to do Kezia, comma, that looks like a delicious drink, exclamation mark.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm. We don't put the commas in when we're talking.
Mm.
So he's saying, when I start talking about what I'm thinking about, my crazy bad sentence that goes all over the place, which ramble means going for a walk without going knowing where you're going, gets him to the destination, which is knowing something. So his knowing something starts from starting. And this long walk is called talking to somebody. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's probably true.
Yeah.
Let's keep going.
I mix in.
Yeah. Inarticulate.
Inarticulate.
Keep going.
Louis, I draw out my sentence connectives. I use
appositions.
Apposition, where they are not
strictly
necessarily, and I use other
rhetorical
tricks. Tricks that will draw out speech. In this way, I gain the time to
fabricate
my ideas in this workshop of reason.
This is a metaphor, a big long metaphor.
Oh.
The workshop of reason. Reason is thinking, like rationalism. The workshop is where you build things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go back to the beginning. I mix in inarticulate. Now, to articulate, your arm has a whole bunch of joints. One shoulder, right? There's a socket here and joins your torso to your arm. Then you got an elbow, which can only bend one way, but your arm can twist, right?
Yeah.
And then you got your wrist, which can bend a certain amount, and then it hurts if you do it more. And then you've got your fingers, which each has multiple joints. So if I go like this, I'm articulating. Now, this metaphor is used with your mouth.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So the alphabet gives us a whole bunch of letters, and some of them we pronounce the same way every time, and some of them we pronounce differently.
Yeah.
X. How do you pronounce X? Right? Xerox is one of the vocab words. X-ray, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we say the word X as part of the word.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to pronounce. If your friend's name is X-E-N-A, what's her name?
X-E-N-A?
Yeah. You could say X-E.
X-E.
Xena is usually how it's pronounced. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Xenia, X-E-N-I-A, is a, it's a feeling of love, friendship. Xena is a character from a TV show. All right. Where are we? Okay, so articulate means figure out by talking, moving, right? Where are we? I mix in inarticulate, that means not clear.
Not clear.
Not easily moving noises, like and ah and huh. Right? We don't put that in our writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I draw out my sentence connectives. And, but, like that, I use apposition, Oh, I've suddenly forgotten what an apposition is. Apposition. I know this, but I've forgotten what it is. I'm going to wait a minute. Hopefully it won't be too embarrassing when I remember. Apposition, where they are not, strictly necessary. And I use other rhetorical tricks. Rhetoric, H-R-H-E-T-O-R-I-C, mm-hmm. rhetoric, is the art of sounding awesome.
Art of sounding awesome?
Yeah, okay. It's beautiful speech, but it's kind of evil.
Evil?
Or? Yeah, because you're just using tricks of talking to make people think you're smart. Like that. Rhetoric is good speaking, but it's not the good kind because it's true. It's good because it sounds good. Okay. I use other rhetorical tricks that will draw out speech. Now, this is fun because this is a metaphor too. To draw out is to pull out, mm-hmm. right? But it also means to make longer.
What? Oh.
Right? Mm-hmm. In this way, I gain the time to fabricate. And this vocab word means make.
Make.
Yeah. You fabricate a vehicle. You make. Fabricate a car. Right?
I make a car.
Or whatever. You fabricate a phone.
Oh, nice.
Or you fabricate, what's this stuff?
Clothes.
Cloth.
Cloth.
Right?
Oh.
And another word for cloth is?
Fabric.
You see why it's called that?
Yeah.
All right. In my idea in this workshop of reason, nothing in all this is more useful than some movement on my part. than some movement on the part of my sister, a movement indicating that she intends to interrupt me. Yeah. So when I'm talking to you and you're like glazed eyes and looking at the clock, I'm like, okay, she's not. She doesn't care about this. Mm. I say, but really, this is very important. And then suddenly I get your attention again, maybe. Mm. Or she's like shaking her head back and forth. I say, what? You don't believe me? All right. From some movement from my sister. Where is she?
A movement indicating.
That she? Continue.
That she intends to interrupt me.
For my strained mind.
From my strained mind becomes even more excited by the need to defend this inherent.
That means built in.
Oh, inherent right to speak against attack from the outside.
Now remember, we're talking about the rationalists, mm-hmm. those people who are crazy. You wouldn't let them marry your daughter. Mm-hmm. They're the people who think you can figure out everything just by thinking about it. Mm-hmm. They think that some true things about the world mm-hmm. are inherent. That is, they're built in to you. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this? Do you think babies are afraid of cliffs?
Wait.
You know what a cliff is,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So we get a brand new baby, we steal it from the hospital, we drive it to the edge of a cliff, and we put it on the edge of the cliff. And do you think the baby would crawl up to the edge of the cliff, look over the edge, and like keep crawling, or would it be afraid?
I think it won't be afraid.
It won't be afraid. So you think fear of heights is not inherent?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they did a test on this, and really? I can't remember the result. But yeah, like what they did was they got like a table, right? And they put a piece of glass or plexiglass on it and extended it over the edge so that it would go right past here. And the baby could see that the ground was farther along. Uh-huh. And I don't remember if the baby kept crawling or if the baby stopped. Oh. But if you did that enough tests, stole enough babies from hospitals, you'd probably get a good answer.
Right? I think we're going to go to the jail.
Yeah, but that'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
For the story.
Yeah.
What? Why did you steal all those babies? I was doing science. I'm not a crazy rationalist. Okay, where are we? Becomes even more excited by the need to defend this inherent right to speak against attack from the outside. The mind's abilities grow like those of a great general who is faced with a very difficult situation. You keep going.
It is against this background that I understand how useful
Molière. Some French guy.
Okay. Found his maid.
A maid is a
person who works
in a house?
Yeah.
Doing what?
Cleaning.
Yeah. Dishes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also means?
Not married
woman. Unmarried woman. Yeah. Yeah. So Molière, some smart guy, he mm-hmm. found his maid very useful, not just for cleaning his house, but by asking her questions or telling her stuff.
That's smart.
Apparently. Yeah. For if, as he claims, he trusted her judgment more than his own, this would indicate a degree of modesty on his part, which I refuse to believe was there. A little joke. Okay. I trust her judgment more than mine.
Oh, that's what he's saying. It's
a cute joke.
Mm-hmm.
The other person's?
The other person's face. It's a curious source of inspiration for a person who speaks. A single glance which indicates that I haven't expressed thought is already understood. Best
bestows. That means gives.
On us, the other half of the formulation.
So yeah, if they're saying that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? Then you don't need to say any more. You can move on to the next part, right? Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You should look at me when I do that so I can confirm that you're not just sleeping.
That's weird.
Because that's the idea here. Now, this is what I've been teaching a lot of students. Did I tell you this, how to get a higher grade every course? No? Oh, well, let me tell you right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get a higher grade, you have to do a bunch of things you don't want to do. You ready?
No.
Here's the list. Number one.
Okay.
To sit in the front row.
Oh, I did that.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
But that means you can't use that one. You have to sit in the front row. And the reason is you have to be able to see the teacher really well.
Mm.
And more importantly, the teacher has to see you.
Mm.
You can't be hiding in the back like I'd like to. Mm. I'd like to be hiding in the back with my comic books and not listening to whatever it is the teacher says, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you sit in the front row. Then the other thing is you have to watch the teacher the whole class. Teacher walks left, you watch the teacher go left. Teacher walks right, you watch the teacher go right.
Mm-hmm.
You have to listen to the teacher, unfortunately.
Okay.
Which you have to do because you have to ask intelligent questions. So if the teacher is saying stuff about the planet Mars.
Wow.
And saying, the planet Mars is a very small planet near Earth. And you say, how near Earth? Then that's an intelligent question.
Mm-hmm.
And if the teacher knows the answer, you get a higher mark. If the teacher's mm-hmm. not sure, you might get a lower mark, but probably you can figure it out.
Mm.
Sometimes they'll just say a very long way. But they probably have a piece of paper that tells them.
Oh.
Right? And then...
You actually get a higher mark if you're...
Yeah, question? I'll explain.
Mm-hmm.
And then the teacher says, and of course it has some moons just like the Earth. And you say, wait a minute, moons, more than one moon? And the teacher says, yes. Wow, you say. What are their names? Are they moon one and moon two? And the teacher says, no, it's Phobos and Deimos. And you say, what's Phobos mean? The teacher says, fear.
Wow, actually?
Yeah. And then what's Deimos mean? That means terror.
Oh.
And then the teacher thinks, wow, this student really is smart.
What?
Why?
Because
asking questions that are based on the things that the teacher is saying, rather than, can I go to the bathroom? When is class over? Like that. That'll get you lower mark.
Mm.
Right? So, number one, you have to sit in the front row. Number two, you have to watch the teacher at all times. Number three, you have to listen to the teacher. And number four, lastly, you have to ask intelligent questions.
Mm.
The amazing thing about this is all of these work together to make your grades higher. Think about this. If you're sitting in the front row, it's harder to hide at the back, right? If you brought your comic book to the front row and you're reading it in your, or you're texting to your friend, mm-hmm. teacher's going to know about it. You're going to get in trouble, so you won't do that as much. Number two, if you're watching your teacher go left and right, you're not on your phone texting your friend or reading your comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, if you are listening to what the teacher says,
mm-hmm.
you actually are listening to what the teacher says rather than have the sound just go off in the background, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason you have to listen is because you have to ask the intelligent question.
Mm-hmm.
And the intelligent question has to be intelligent, which means it has information in it,
mm-hmm.
rather than just can I go to the bathroom? Is that clock slow? So, that's how you get higher marks.
But why is the teacher like...
Well, when you pay attention in my class, that makes me like the class more.
Okay.
If you make me like my class less, I want to punish you.
Oh, no.
Right? Make sense? Yeah.
Oh, I get it.
It's just nature. But also, you're learning more, which makes me happier, which makes you get a higher mark. It's a feedback. Unfortunately, schools don't always have great teachers and great stuff, so we just have to do it. But you can fake it. I faked it for a long time.
Oh, really? How?
I followed those rules I made up for myself.
Oh, really?
In grade 8, I was doing really bad. They wanted to kick me out of the school. And I was kicking myself. I was skipping classes. And then I said, well, I didn't say anything. My mom said, Jesse, your grades are really bad. I'm like, yeah, I don't care. I don't like school. I'd rather do the things I want to do. I try and get out of going to school as much as possible. And then the principal called me into his office, you know, over the announcement. And he said, so it seems like you don't want to be here. That scared the shit out of me. Because I was young and dumb. And he says, well, yeah, we can get you out of here. I'm like, what do you mean?
Oh.
You can get like kicked out of the school. And I said, I can change. And then as I walked out, I said, I'm going to teach them. I'm going to get higher grades, but I'm not going to learn nothing. And so I came up with this evil plan. Get good grades without actually doing any of the boring work they wanted me to do. The problem is some of it's based on your homework, right? And they give you a lot. And it's not very fun, usually. So why did they do that?
I have no idea.
Because school is prison. That's why.
Oh.
And they want to punish you. That's what you're there for, is to be punished and to learn to be obedient. Now, if you fake obedience, you say, this thing is homework. You have to take it home. And you say, oh, yes, thank you so much. And then you don't bring it back finished. Then you get in trouble because you weren't obedient. So my solution, I would take the homework that they gave me, and I would go to the library during my lunch break and my recess break. I would do it there. I would do it in class when the teacher says you should be reading or whatever. I'd be doing my homework.
Oh.
And I wouldn't take my books home. I wouldn't take my homework home. That time is for me. You can't make me do this stuff at home.
Oh.
And it worked.
Oh, it worked?
Yeah. I sometimes had to stay after school because I'm not taking this stuff home. I'd be in the classroom still working on my homework. And it wasn't perfect because I'm just trying to get a good mark. I can't get a perfect mark because I don't know what the teacher wants sometimes. But it might went from the one of the worst students to one of the best students.
Oh, wow.
In the course of one semester.
Wow.
They even gave me an award for it. So trust me. I can show it to you. I'll take a photo of it. So trust me, these rules work.
I should try it.
You should. You've already got the first one down, which is sit in the front row.
Yeah. I like to sit in the front row.
I do too, because it makes it easier for me to do the other things.
Because
if you sit in the back, it makes it easier to do the other things.
I
did that at university too.
What? I should?
Yeah.
It worked?
Yeah, but it's way different. I like university way more because it's very different. You get to choose the classes.
Oh, yeah.
You're the boss.
Yeah.
If you don't like the teacher, you fire that person. You go get some.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You move classes.
Oh.
You find the person you like who teaches you well. You still have to do homework, but it's not nearly as much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like 3 or 4 papers a semester. Right?
That's so good.
It's really good.
Whoa.
You have to, like, sometimes there's quizzes. Sometimes, but you have to pay attention to get a passing grade, but it's way less work. And you get to choose the things you want to study, so it's a lot better.
Oh.
It's not prison.
Yeah.
I loved university. I went for 16 years.
You got 16 years?
I did, because I loved it so much. It was so fun.
Oh, wow.
Get to learn things. Where are we? Gifts, bestows.
Yeah.
Okay. I believe this. Where? I believe that many. Oh, yeah. Here, right? I believe this is yeah, one yeah. here. Okay, you go.
I believe that many agree.
Orator.
Orator. In.
I don't know what that word is. Okay. Well, probably when.
When.
Missing W. Yeah. When.
When he opened his mouth, did not know what he was going to say.
I believe that's true too.
Yeah.
Some people can't speak in front of other people without having notes.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Well, that's something you can practice. But orator is a speaker.
Speaker.
O-R-A-L. Mm-hmm. Oral is the adjective for mouth.
Oh.
Some dentists specialize in doing surgery mm-hmm. on people's mouths. Mm-hmm. They're called oral surgeons. Some people take drugs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Some people, they inject it in their arm. Some people smoke it. Mm-hmm. Some people take a pill out, mm-hmm. put it in their mouth, and swallow it. Oh, they take their pill orally through the mouth. Right?
Yeah. But they have pills?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh. I believe that many a great orator, when he opened his mouth, did not know what he was going to say. But
the conviction that the necessarily
wealth
of
thought
would be naturally inspired by the conditions surrounding his speech and his resulting excitement causes him to be bold enough to make a beginning with his speech.
Right. I think that's true. This makes me think of that thunderbolt of Mirabeau. So this is some guy from 200 years ago at least, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mirabeau sent the master of ceremonies packing. Master of ceremonies is like a guy who runs the show when a bunch of things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. At a ceremony, right? Mm-hmm. Packing, sent the master of ceremonies packing when the latter, that is the master of ceremonies, after the last national meeting led by the king on June 23rd, in which the king had ordered the members of the assembly to disperse, that means go home, returned to the meeting room where the assembly had not dispersed and asked whether they had received the king's orders. So he says, disperse! The king says disperse, and he leaves. And then he comes back and nobody's left. He says, did you not hear the king's orders? Yeah, they're not listening to you.
Oh.
Yes, wow. Mirabeau replied, we have understood the king's orders. I am convinced that when he made this humane start, he did not think of those bayonets. Aha. All right, a bayonet. You never heard this word before, right? Yeah. You know what guns look like, right?
Yep.
So, back before, they still use these, but not as much. Back before guns had lots of bullets in them, they would put a knife on the end of their gun.
Oh, really?
Like that.
Oh.
And what happened was, you'd shoot your one bullet, and then it'd take 2 minutes to load it. So you would have a guy coming at you. You use this like a spear. What? Stab him. This thing's called a bayonet.
It takes 2 minutes to load?
It used to. Oh, or a minute. It depends on how fast you are, because you have to not put it in here. You have to put it in the end. Yeah, very slow. Now it only takes 3 seconds to load or something. Yeah. Right? Not even. Very fast, yeah. You play those computer games, it makes it super easy.
Yeah, I know.
And nobody wants to play the computer games where you load your musket. And you discharge it, and then you drop it down. You get open your belt pouch, and you pull out a piece of paper, and you pull out...
Paper?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
A little piece of paper, and you pull out a ball.
Okay.
Which is made of lead. Oh, and then you pull out your horn. Got a horn, and has a little cap on it. Inside the horn is the gunpowder.
Okay.
You take it up to the end of the barrel. You pour just a little bit of gunpowder in, shake it down, put the lid back on your horn, put that back on your belt pouch. You take the paper, you put it on the end, and then you get out a big rod that sticks out on the underneath the gun right here that you keep with it at all times, and you push it down into the end. Then you get the ball, and you drop it in the end, and you get the stick out again and push that down.
Okay.
And then you bring up the gun, and then you get your horn out again, and you pour a little bit of the powder on the pan.
Okay.
Which is like a connected with a little tiny tunnel to the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a flint. A flint is a stone that makes a spark.
Oh, okay.
That you pull back, and it's on a little trigger mechanism. Mm-hmm. And then when you pull the trigger again, discharging your gun, the flint goes forward,
mm-hmm.
makes a little spark because it's hitting the metal, and that lights the powder on the pan. Okay. That goes into the tunnel, and then that shoots the ball out. See how long it took?
Yeah.
Just to explain it?
Yeah.
So that's why you need a bayonet.
That's one.
That's one bullet.
What the?
Yeah.
Actually?
Truly.
What if you miss it?
That's why there's 60 guys beside you with their guns loaded, too.
That's why.
If you get really fast, you can do like that to be like 4 times a minute.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, that's working really fast.
What's the world record?
I think it's probably around 4 rounds a minute, maybe 5, I don't know. They don't do it anymore much, right?
Yeah.
Because it's so slow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we?
Somewhere.
Bayonet.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that he made this humane start. He did not think of those bayonets, with which he closed his speech. So the bayonets come out, right? When people don't listen to your words, they get out their weapons. Yes, sir, he repeated. We have understood them. One can see that he has no idea of where he is going. However, on what authority do you think you are entitled? He continues, and sudden source of amazing thoughts began to flow from him to address orders to us. We are the representatives of the nation. Ah, this is what he needed. The nation gives orders. It does not receive orders. And he surges up the heights of hubris. Now, this vocab word
mm-hmm.
means you're thinking you're better than everybody.
Okay.
Pride, you know?
Pride? No.
Pride? P-R-I-D-E?
No.
Okay. So the opposite of pride is humility.
Mm-hmm.
Humility is when you say somebody says you're awesome, you're amazing, you're mm-hmm. so great, you say, oh, no.
Oh, that's me.
Humble.
Humble?
Yeah, you have humility, mm-hmm. you are humble.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody says to you, wow, you're amazing, you're great, and you say, that's true, then you're full of pride, right?
Okay.
Now, we have to learn a lot of stuff in school about, like, wars and stuff like that, right?
Oh, we're learning it right now.
Which one? World War One or Two?
One.
One, okay. So, World War Two is a little easier to explain.
Yeah.
Why did World War Two happen?
Oh, no.
Because World War One. That's the answer, okay?
Yeah, thank
you. Now, here's the hard one. Why did World War One happen? That's the hard one to explain. But if you have this vocab word, it's not so hard.
Okay.
Hubris.
Hubris.
Pride.
Oh, I'm better than anyone?
Yeah.
Oh.
So country A and country B think they're all that. They think they're so good.
Okay.
Right? England and France and Germany and Russia, mm-hmm. they're all like, I'm the best!
Okay.
And nobody's telling them they're not, right? And they're not listening if they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so one guy says, if you do that, I'll do this. And the other one says, you can't make me feel small. I'm the best.
Oh, okay.
And they start like upping and upping and upping. And then suddenly, World War One.
Oh.
And nobody would back down because everybody thinks I'm the best. Make sense?
How did it end?
Badly.
Okay.
It ended in 1918.
Mm-hmm.
And the prideful countries of England and France, they said, Germany, you have to write down that you wrote, you have to write this down. You started the war and you have to pay for the whole war. And Germany's like, really? And they're saying, yes.
Okay.
You have to pay for all the dead people. All of this is your fault.
Okay.
When it was a whole bunch of countries that were prideful, right?
Yeah.
Germany was made to feel and say that they were responsible.
Mm-hmm.
They had to pay for all the damage.
Oh, wow.
When it wasn't just them. So why did World War II happen?
Because of that.
Because of that.
Bro.
Right? Hubris is very dangerous.
That's so dumb.
It is. When you see your friends fighting, mm-hmm. you don't, you know, tell each of them, hey, why don't you be more prideful? Because that'll make the situation worse, yeah. right? You say, look, can't we all be friends here? Like, you know, you said some things maybe he didn't like. He said some things maybe he didn't like. Can't we all be friends? Mm. Can bring this down a little bit, not be so up. But no, if you're wearing all your medals and you think you're a king and you're better than everybody and nobody's better than you, you can get into an idea that's wrong and start sending millions of people to get killed over it.
Yeah.
And then lie about who is responsible. Yeah. It was them. It wasn't me. I'm still wearing this crown. It wasn't me. Like that. Mm-hmm. The nation gives orders. It does not receive orders. And he surges up to the heights of hubris. And to make everything, probably everything, perfectly plain to you. And only at this point he finds the proper expression for the fact, for the act of defiance for which his soul is prepared. Quote, you should go and tell your king that we shall not leave our places here except when forced with bayonets. Upon which he settled, utterly satisfied, into a chair. Mm. Keep going.
Okay, let's go wash.
Yeah.
Okay.
See if this is still recording. Yep. Strange odor loaded the breeze, a low continuous murmur, like the arising from a full but gently flowing river, came to my ears, intermingled with the peculiar hum of multitudinous human voices. While I listened in an extremity of astonishment, which I need not attempt to describe, a strong and brief gust of the wind broke off from that incumbent fog as if by the wand of an enchanter. I found myself at the foot of a high mountain, looking down into the vast plain through which wound a majestic river. On the margin of this river stood the eastern-looking city, such as we read of in the Arabian tales, but of a character even more singular than any there described. From my position, which was far above the level of the town, I could perceive in every nook and corner, as if delineated upon a map, the streets seemed innumerable, and crossed each other irregularly in all directions, but were rather long winding alleys than streets, and absolutely swarmed with inhabitants. The houses were wildly picturesque. Well, that sounds great. Hole punch for you.
Nice.
Bottom of the page. Thinking.
Oh, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
What's therapist?
Therapist?
Yeah.
Therapy, you know that?
No.
Therapy is basically another word for healing.
Mm-hmm.
A therapist is a healer, kind of.
Is there?
Yeah.
So the doctor?
Yes, usually. But it doesn't have to be. So imagine, like, you were stolen from a hospital as a baby, and some weirdo took you to a cliff. And ever since then, you've felt bad and worried about stuff, especially when you're near cliffs.
Oh, okay.
Somebody might say, you should go see a therapist. And the therapist will use some techniques, ideas, methods to try and make you not afraid of cliffs anymore or something.
That works?
No, not really. I mean, it can. Really? It can.
Oh.
One of the therapies that people actually probably need to do more is write.
Right?
Because talking and writing are related.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a trauma...
Mm-hmm.
Some damage writing, but I think you can just get over some of it probably just by not focusing so much on it and moving on. How did this word come up?
I have no idea. No, I just like out there.
Oh, there?
Yeah.
So there's also something called physical therapy.
Physical therapy. Okay.
Physical is of the body, right?
Okay.
Physics. About things that fall.
I hate physics.
it's math, basically, right? It's calculating how fast things fall and stuff like that. Anyways, physical therapy is like if you got in a terrible motorcycle accident and you can't walk anymore. But you might be able to walk in future. How do they get you from not being able to walk to being able to walk? You go to physical therapy. And some guy or person who's seen lots of people who have been crippled like you have help you to learn to walk again. Not like you learning exactly, but make your muscles stronger, make you work those muscles every day. There's also speech therapy. There's a whole bunch of ones.
What? Oh, would like that help?
Yeah, like if you're having trouble talking, some people do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's all sorts of different kinds of therapy.
Does that help?
It can. Sometimes. I haven't used a lot of therapists myself.
Saying I never used
it. It's something rich people do.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But you have to pay for it. Oh.
Well, some. If you, like, got in a car accident, there's a hospital in Vancouver called GF Strong.
Okay.
That's like a paraplegic hospital. People who have been to terrible car accidents need to learn to walk again. You go to the pool there. You... walk on special thingies and
that's cool.
Learn to be mobile by yourself again.
So that's physical therapy?
I don't know. There's a sign that says therapist.
Yeah,
could be.
I was just curious.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Be curious.
Okay.
All right, where are we? Maybe you could think of as tutoring as school therapy.
Yeah, I should.
Because school is so traumatic.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll make a good one.
All right. Thinking
about the master of ceremonies. it is impossible to visualize him except in a state of complete
spiritual
bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is when you have no more money and you can't pay your bills.
Oh, sad.
Yeah, and it's a situation. Mm-hmm. Rupt means like exploded or opened, mm-hmm. right? Bank, so it's like you got your piggy bank, and all the money's gone.
No.
I'm bankrupt! Like that. usually, this is like a legal problem. Spiritual bankruptcy is like you don't believe in anything.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. The law is the same as that which by... It is the same as that by which an electrically neutral body, when entering the atmosphere of a charged body, will...
Well, something.
What does it say? I can't read it. Something, the opposite negative, bankrupt. Bankrupt?
Yeah.
Electrical charge. And just as the energy charge in the charge body is strengthened through interaction, so it is the case of this annihilation of the opponent. Mirabeau's enthusiasm knew no bounds. Perhaps.
Perhaps. It was just the twitching of the upper lip or an ambiguously uncertain movement about the sleeves that caused the change of the course of events in France.
So he's talking about when they killed the King of France. Because he was, like, doing his country very badly. He was mm-hmm. starting lots of wars. He was paying for the wars with money from the people and paying for his house with money from the people. And he was disconnected from the people, and the people didn't like that. So they stopped taking his orders, and they say, you know, we're chopping heads off this week. Let's chop his head off.
Okay.
And they did.
Nice.
Yeah, agreed. Perhaps it was just a twitching of upper lip or an ambiguously uncertain movement about the sleeves that caused the change in the course of the events of France. One reads that Mirabeau stood up as soon as the master of ceremonies had left and proposed that the assembly should constitute itself as the National Assembly and as inviolable. That means nobody can touch them. For since he had lost his charge, and this is like the metaphor of the electricity earlier, mm-hmm. like a Kleinstein bottle. So Klein's bottle, this is like kind of related to batteries.
Yeah.
I don't know. They use rabbit fur and like a glass. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you get the glass and you spin it, mm-hmm. glass jar or something.
Okay.
And you spin it on the rabbit fur, and it makes static electricity.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know. Something like that. This is talking about batteries, basically. Mm-hmm. Or a capacitor. Like a Kleinstein bottle, he had become neutralized, and he gave the room in his mind to fear of the judiciary. This is judges.
So he's fear of judges?
It's not all super clear. At Châtelet. And to the carefulness in political action. So I'm not sure what this is exactly. This is all French Revolution stuff, metaphor. This is a curious convergence, that means coming together two different things, mm-hmm. between the phenomena of the natural and the moral world, which, if one wished to pursue the matter, could be shown to apply even in the minor subplots of this episode. But I shall leave my simile. You know what a simile is?
Yeah.
Good. And I shall return to my subject.
What's this?
Phenomena? Oh, yeah. That's a very important word. It's a very fancy word for things happening.
Okay.
So, this is something I like to think about when writing essays.
Mm-hmm.
One of the words you're not allowed to use is thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the reason is things are too low of vocab, right? And things don't make you think of much. There's a thing in the bathroom. What, is it a poop or is it a monster?
Okay.
Right? It's not clear.
Yeah.
So, the thing should be replaced with some other word.
Mm-hmm.
Object.
Yeah.
There's an object in the bathroom. What is it? Well, it looks like a soap dispenser, but there's no soap in it. Mm-hmm. And also, it weighs a lot, so I don't know what it is.
Oh, okay.
Let's go look at it, right? Mm-hmm. Object. Another thing you could have in the bathroom is an idea.
There's idea in that.
Yeah, I'm in the shower. Okay. And then I think, in class, I should print this up and bring it to class.
Oh, yeah.
That's an idea, right? And that's a thing, too. Objects, ideas, and then there's one more thing that happens in the bathroom and everywhere else in the universe. Well, not exactly everywhere in the universe. That's stuff happening.
Okay.
So what happens in the bathroom while I'm showering? Water hits me.
Yeah.
It drips down and goes to the drain and then out the pipe, right? Mm-hmm. Showering.
Mm-hmm.
Outside, we don't call this showering. Usually we call it raining.
Yeah.
What makes the water in the sky go down? Gravity, we say.
Yeah.
Gravity's a noun, right? The idea of rain is a noun. And raining mm-hmm. is a noun, too.
Oh, really?
Think about it. Okay. What's happening outside right now? Rain. It is raining. Right?
Oh, yeah.
It's an activity, but it's a thing that happens.
Mm.
So it's not a thing like an object you find in the basement. It's a thing that happens. So people give birth to babies,
mm-hmm.
right? Horses eat grass. Those are both phenomena.
Mm.
Grass is a thing. An object?
Oh, yeah.
Horses have ideas, like, I'd like to go in the barn now, please. Maybe. But phenomena also happen. Lightning is a very good example of a mm-hmm. phenomenon, right? Because it happens, but it's not happening all the time around us all the time, but it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
Hailstones. Hailing. We had one a couple weeks ago or last week, right?
I saw it.
Mm-hmm. It's a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So, phenomena are things happening.
How about subplot?
Oh, you know what a plot is, right?
Yeah.
Sub means under.
Uh-huh.
A subplot is a part of a bigger story.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have two characters who are going on a quest to find a sword so they can save a kingdom, right?
Okay.
Very bad story so far. But the younger one is worried about his cousin Fred, who never likes to take showers.
What the?
His cousin Fred, it comes up at the beginning of the story, and then he gets a letter during the journey about, yep, I'm still not taking showers. And then at the end of the story, as they're returning to the village with the sword to go on the another quest or whatever, Fred shows up and he's all clean. And the reason he's clean is because he learned something or something. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
The reason is Fred exists in this plot because we needed a subplot.
Mm.
Not the main plot.
Oh.
A little tiny plot that's inside of it.
Oh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I always think maybe you could have a story that's all subplots.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing actually happens. You just have this guy over here and that guy over there. And then I don't think that can... I think we would create a plot while seeing these different subplots. What do you think? Or maybe that's just what life is, just a whole bunch of subplots.
That's true. Could be. Yeah.
All right, back. Even La Fontaine, we don't know who he is either. Even La Fontaine
gives a very fine example of the gradual constitution of thoughts in the process of speaking inescapable.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Keep going.
Entitled
L'animu malade de la peste.
Okay.
I can almost translate this.
Oh, really?
Le means the.
Yeah.
Animo would be animals.
Animal? Okay.
Malade means feeling bad, like sick.
Okay.
De la peste. Pest would be disease.
So the animal that makes
Something. Yeah.
Disease?
The diseased animals? I don't know.
Oh, no.
Something like that. Okay. I'm not a French translator. We continue. In this fable, the fox is forced... you know what a fable is?
No.
It's a story with talking animals.
Talking animals?
A story with talking animals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In this fable, the fox is forced to give a speech in defense of the lion.
Oh, wow.
Without knowing where on earth he should find support for his defense.
Wow.
The well-rounded idea is born from a beginning which is dictated by necessity.
Necessity.
That is required. So, if you're going to a vacation in Hawaii, what's a necessity?
Mm-hmm.
Bathing suit.
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, because there's water all over.
And it's hot there.
Yeah.
And it's probably illegal to swim naked. Right?
Yeah.
And
sunscreen?
Probably sunscreen.
Yeah.
What else? Food.
Yeah, food.
But you probably don't need to take it with you. There's pineapples there, right?
Pineapple.
And bananas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever went to Hawaii?
I've been there twice. It's amazing.
Wow.
Look. When you go out and it's raining,
mm-hmm.
the rain is warm.
Wow, actually?
Can you believe that? It's crazy. And the beach is too hot. You can't touch it with your feet. It burns your feet.
Really? Is it that hot?
It's that hot.
What?
You have to wear flip-flops or you'll get your feet will burn.
Oh, that's so cool.
And the water's really warm, too.
What? That's...
I mean, it's tropical, right?
True.
It's nice.
Okay.
It's really nice. As soon as you get off the airplane, it's like, wow.
It's hot.
It's just warm all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, you need to have a roof. I've only been there in the winter, and it was like
what?
That.
Yeah. Actually?
Because it's so near the equator, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's... They call it paradise.
Oh, that's so
it's pretty
cool.
Simple. Pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, it's bad for books. Like, yeah. If you're living in Hawaii... You could just, sleep under a tree and probably be fine. But if you got your books there, they're going to get all wet and moldy, right?
Yeah.
So it's bad for books.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you should probably be dry once in a while. Because it does rain there, right?
Mm.
And you need a dry towel.
True.
But other than that, it's pretty easy living.
Mm.
Yep. Where are we?
The fable.
The fable is well known. Plague.
A plague. It's a
ravaging.
Ravaging. The animal kingdom. The lion assembles the important animals and explains that it must be offered heaven with a sacrifice in order to get it into...
To relent.
Relent.
That means stop. So something or someone has to be executed to make this plague stop, the disease to stop. The lion maintained that there were many sinners among the animals, and the greatest of these would have to be sacrificed for the survival of the others. So the lion lines up all the animals. Mouse down the end, maybe. Horse in the middle.
Oh,
right?
Wow. Okay.
A lion and tigers near the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the fox say? Let's find out. The lion maintained there would be many sinners among the animals, and the greatest of these would have to be sacrificed for the survival of the others. He therefore suggested that everyone should confess their sins to him.
Okay.
He, for his part, had to admit that in the heat of the hunger, he had killed many a sheep, and even some dogs who had come too close. Moreover, he had once, by chance, in a gourmet mood, feasted upon a shepherd. If no one else could show greater weakness, he was ready to die.
Mm.
Sir,
said the fox, who was trying to
avert, that means avoid,
disaster from his own.
Or prevent.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're too generous. You're honest in
endeavor
leads you too far. What's wrong with struggling a sheep or a dog, worthless creature? And then...
Quant le gar?
Okay. He continues for this in the main point.
On put, I think small. Dire. Bad? A little badness. I'm not sure. Although,
he has no idea what to say about him.
And then we get another French with a two in it.
Yeah.
Qu'il me trente tout mal. Something mal means bad.
Okay.
And this is a question, I think. He says that on the off chance he can think of something, and now he is in trouble. Etant, he continues, a poor phrase to use, but it does not give him time. Like a minute, just a second.
Oh.
He's trying to think of some good things to say about them. De ces gens... La, we don't know
four.
What this is because there's a four in it.
Yeah.
And only at this point does he hit that thought which gets him out of trouble. Qui sur les animaux se font un chim rique? With the two. Empire.
Yeah, empire.
And now for the demonstration that the ass, this is a donkey.
Oh.
The bloodthirsty one. who eats away at herbs. He's the evil one, the donkey, because he's always eating grass.
Wow.
That the ass was a proper sacrificial victim. Wow. And everyone pounces on the ass, tears him to pieces.
Oh, that's so sad.
Mm-hmm. Also wrong, right?
Yeah.
Such speech is truly thought in the vocal medium. The sequences of thoughts and expressions go alongside each other, and the underlying psychological realities converge, maybe?
Yeah.
Means come together? Mm-hmm. Language under these conditions is not mana something? It is not like some impediment. Mm-hmm. On the wheel of the spirit. Language is a second wheel on the same axle. Okay. It's a metaphor, simile. The situation is quite different in the mind if the mind is finished already with a thought before the speaking starts. Yeah. So speaking a speech, mm-hmm. I find is very hard, whereas I find it's easy to talk.
Yeah, same.
Then the spirit stays back in the process of mere articulation. And remember, articulation is getting all the movements, right? Mm-hmm. Of your mouth, or anti-disestablishmentarianism. That's a vocab word.
Oh, what is that?
Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Wait, anti?
Yeah, remember DNA?
Yeah. Oh, that's anti-something from something.
Deoxyribonucleic acid.
Yeah.
Or ASA, you remember ASA?
Yeah.
What is it?
Oh, no.
Acetylsalicylic.
Oh, yeah. Acetylsalicylic acid.
Yeah, and you articulated it. Oh. You said all the little parts, right? Oh.
And so, that's aspirin.
That's aspirin, yeah. DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid.
Deoxynucleic acid.
Yeah.
Oh, that was acid?
Yeah, the A stands for acid.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah. And then, what was the one before? DNA, ASA, and, anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the longest vocab words in English. I'm working on it.
Okay.
And tarianism. It's made up of a whole bunch of parts, right? Anti, A-N-T-I. Dis, D-I-S. Establishment. E-S-T.
Establishment.
Tarian. T-A-R-I-A-N. Ism.
Oh, I want to.
Tarian.
Tarianism.
This word is a really old word, and it has a bunch of reactions in it. So today, on the news, they talk about something called disinformation.
Okay.
Dis means not, mm-hmm. or bad, or something mm-hmm. like that, right? Information, you know what that means, yeah. right? Disinformation. We understand it's like bad information, something like yeah. that, right? Anti-disinformation would be against bad information, right? Okay. So you can see the formation of big long words like that. Somebody has an idea, then they put a dis in front of it, then they put an anti in front of it, and then they put some other things at the end. So anti means against, dis means bad, establishment means something that exists already,
mm-hmm.
Something that was made. Tarian or Arian, A-R-I-A-N, is like a person who does. Veterinarian, right?
Okay.
And then ism means a set of beliefs.
Okay.
Communism is yeah. a set of beliefs.
Yeah.
What else? Vegetarianism.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Vegetarian is a person who practices
yeah.
vegetarianism.
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Vegans are people who are from the planet Venus. Yeah. or people who don't eat vegetables. Oh, no, only eat vegetables fruits.
Yeah.
And that's it?
And no meat. How do you not eat meat?
Huh? How do you not eat meat?
Yeah.
By denying your basic instinct.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell.
They don't drink milk either.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this from cows?
Yeah, they don't drink any animal
products.
No eggs.
No egg.
Vegetarian will eat eggs, usually. Some vegetarians will eat fish, too.
Ooh.
Well, because they don't think of it as meat. Even though it is meat, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking about why they don't think of it as meat, and I think I know the answer.
Wow.
When you got a pig, I've never killed a pig myself, but you got a pig here, and he's like, oh, nice pig, and then you get your sword out, or a bayonet, even better, and you stab the pig. What does it do? Yeah, it cries, right?
Yeah.
And that makes you feel bad.
Yeah.
Because humans make noises like that.
Yeah.
What happens when you get a fish out of the ocean and it's flopping around and you stab it?
Nothing.
It flops more.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It can't breathe.
Oh.
So it can't scream. Now, if we got a dolphin out and we're petting the dolphin, then I reach under the table and I pull out my, what's it called? Stabby
knife?
Thing?
Yeah.
No. On the end of a knife. On the end of a gun.
Oh, okay.
It's called a.
Yeah, that's. Oh. Bayonet.
So I reach under the table, pull out my bayonet, and I stab the dolphin. What does it say?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't like it either.
Yeah.
So we don't eat dolphin.
We don't eat dolphin.
We don't. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, I don't.
Whales make noises when you stab them, right?
Really?
Yeah. They breathe air just like we do.
They breathe air.
Right?
For a while.
So I think that's why some people will eat fish, even though it's meat, and they think it's not meat because it doesn't make them feel bad when they kill a fish.
Oh.
Make sense?
Yeah.
But yeah.
What if vegetarian eats meat? What does happen?
Thunder comes down and lights them on fire.
Nothing happens?
They're not a vegetarian anymore.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Some people used to be, they're ex-vegan, ex-vegetarian, right?
Mm.
And then some carnivores, people who eat meat.
Yeah.
Switch to becoming vegetarian or vegans. I know a vegetarian.
Oh,
I also know vegans.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It makes their life more difficult.
I can tell.
But also less delicious, I think.
Mm.
Is it unhealthy?
I think it's unhealthy.
Probably.
Yeah. Because eggs have a lot of...
Yeah. Some people say the eggs are bad for you, but I don't believe them.
I don't believe them.
Yeah, I don't believe them.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So,
anti-disestablishmentarianism. Yeah, that's how many syllables. Anti-disestablishmentarianism. 12.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Is that the longest word in English?
Probably not, but that's one of the ones I heard.
What's the longest one?
I don't know. They probably made one up, right? But this was a phenomenon. This is something that happened.
Mm.
So people would say it.
Mm. Okay.
Who are you? I'm an anti-disestablishmentarianist.
You what?
I'm an anti-disestablishmentarianist.
Oh.
So... Establishment, remember, is the thing that exists.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a king, and he's been king for 100 years, mm-hmm. and his dad was king for 1,000 years before that,
okay.
you would say he's the establishment.
Oh.
He exists, he's got all these rules, and all the people know what to do, right? So you could be disestablishment.
Mm-hmm.
We should take away the king.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people who are against that are anti-disestablishment.
Oh, I get
it. Atarian is the person who acts, and ism is the belief set. Mm-hmm. You make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. How about this? I'm a guillotinist.
Guillotine?
You know guillotine? Guillotinist?
No.
Guillotine is the machine that a guy named Dr. Guillotine invented.
Okay, machine.
It's a machine that is designed to chop people's heads off.
What?
No. You've seen it in movies, I think, or cartoons or something. It looks like this. You put your head, the guy's head in here. There's a little hole for the head.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes like that. So you stick your head in there.
Okay.
And he can have his hands over here. There's another hand over here. Right? Mm-hmm. So his head comes through this hole. And then there's like a little train track sort of thing right here. And another one here. And then you put a big sharp knife right here.
Okay.
And it's a heavy knife. There's like lead weight at the top and the sharp blade here.
Okay.
And you wait till the guy's in here. And then you pull a little rope.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the blade fall.
Oh, whoa.
And it's like chop every time, right? Make sure it's sharp enough. And then the head goes off into a basket.
Oh, wow.
And then you get another guy saying, next in line. You pull this guy's body out, put it on a cart. And when the basket's full, you take the heads away. Oh, and you get the next guy in line. Put your head in here, sir. And then pull the rope up. Gets to the top.
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
I'm ready.
And then, rump.
Oh, that.
Scary, right?
Yeah.
It's called a guillotine.
Does that exist right now?
Yeah, I'm sure they exist right now. Oh, we should all be building them, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
In our backyards for when Justin Trudeau comes visiting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of work to do. And I don't know what we're going to do with all the bodies, but the heads will... apparently, there was some scientist guy who was, like, very interested. He said, this is a perfect opportunity. Okay. And he was, like, hanging around while this is happening.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, okay, when you go down, when they chop your head off, I want you to try and talk to me. Because you're going to be alive for a second or something, okay. Right? Because you don't die. Like, in movies, when somebody gets shot, they're just dead instantly.
Yeah. Right?
Unless it's the hero, in which case he's just injured. Or it's the bad guy.
Yeah.
The main bad guy. Then he can take lots of bullets and not die.
Yeah.
And even after he's dead, he can come back to life, right? But in real life, most of the time you get hurt, you're not going to die right away. It takes a minute. And your head has to have blood from your heart, but it has blood in it for a second, right?
Oh.
So once you have no body, if you can hear me, blink your eyes. And they would blink their eyes. And then usually they would fade away because their blood pressure goes down really fast because there's blood coming out. But there was one guy who was doing that.
Wow.
Cool, right?
Yeah.
Crazy guy.
Yeah, crazy guy.
But also a good scientist.
Yeah. Oh, that's so scary.
Yeah. Apparently, Dr. Guillotine, the guy who invented this machine, he got guillotined.
What?
That's what happens when you wait too long before you start building your guillotines, I think, is that everybody gets too excited about it. We should be doing it on a regular basis, probably.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, that's French Revolution, French invention.
Mm.
Back to our story.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we? We got anti-disestablishmentarianism. That wasn't in here. Articulation? Far from... Okay. The situation is quite different if the mind is finished already with a thought before the speaking starts. The spirit stays back in the process of mere articulation, and this business of articulation, far from exciting the spirit, on the contrary, reduces mental intensity. So this is why teacher standing at the front of the class reading from a piece of paper is less interesting than the teacher just talking.
Yeah.
If, therefore, a thought is expressed in a fuzzy way... Hazy, you remember that one?
Yep.
Same.
Oh, okay.
Hazy. A fuzzy way, then it does not at all follow that this thought was conceived in a confused way. That's interesting. I don't know. They sound like they're synonyms. It's a little bit confusing. On the contrary, it is quite possible that the ideas that are expressed in the most confusing fashion are the ones that were thought out most clearly.
Oh.
He's saying it's the opposite of what we think, is you be prepared and you know everything before you start talking. Rather, as you think around the idea, it is best thought out.
Yeah.
One often sees...
In social company where...
Congenial, that means like friendly.
Okay. Conversation inspires everyone with continuous fresh ideas that people who usually feels...
Linguistically? That's language.
Okay.
Inept? Means unskilled? Mm-hmm. Noob?
Noob.
How do you spell noob?
N-O-O-B.
Yeah. Also used to be N-E-W-B.
Oh.
Which makes even more sense, right? And new, and then usually it's short for newbie. But why the B part? I don't know.
No idea.
But we know new...
Mm.
Yeah. Linguistically inept. Feel. Linguistically inept. Feel.
Feel inspired to break into flickering to unstable articulation, to take hold of language and produce something utterly incomprehensible.
And when these people have the other's attention, they show through their embarrassed gestures that they have no idea what they are really trying to say. It is quite probable that these people have thought up something quite apt, that is appropriate and on topic, mm-hmm. and clear. But the abrupt change in activity, the passage of the mind, from thinking to articulation, this abrupt change dampened, that means made weaker, that very excitement, which was necessary for keeping the thought in mind, as well as for putting into words. In such cases, it is all the more necessary that language is available to us with facility, that means easiness, mm-hmm. and ease, so that what we have just thought and are unable to articulate at the very same time can at least be put into words as soon as possible afterwards. There's a French saying, which is l'esprit d'escalier.
L'escalier.
Yeah.
L'escalier.
So in English, the closest word to escalier mm-hmm. is escalator.
Oh.
What's an escalator?
Some stairs moving.
Yeah, this is French for stairs. The stairs.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Escalate means go up.
Really?
Yeah. Escalators, even though they can take you up or down, we only call them things that take you up.
Oh, yeah.
I took the escalator means I went up. I took the de-escalator should mean I went down.
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start calling the escalator that goes down the de-escalator. L'esprit is the spirit.
The spirit escalator.
The spirit of the staircase.
Oh.
Now, what's funny is this is you're like at a party and somebody says something and you're like, oh, you can't say what you wanted to say.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're leaving the party, and you're going down the stairs. And on the stairs, you say, oh, I should have said.
Oh, yeah.
That's l'esprit d'escalier.
Oh.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
It's probably L-E.
L-E?
Yeah, probably. Escalier. Yeah. Yeah, so there's like one word here and one word here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they jump both of them together in French. The spirit of the staircase. The French have a lot of good vocab words, right?
Yeah.
What's the one for when you can't remember if you've done something before, but you feel like you've done something before, or you've been somewhere before?
Yeah,
What's that one called? Déjà vu.
Oh, yeah, déjà vu, yeah.
Notice there's no word in English that explains it.
Oh, yeah.
We just stole it from French.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the same?
I mean, it's... In French, it's déjà vu. In English, it's déjà vu.
Oh, really? Oh,
okay. I'm not even sure what it means in French. je means I. Mm-hmm. Vous means you. Déjà vu?
You and me?
It could be, yeah. You remember when we went there and did that? And I heard a really interesting theory as to what that is. You know, when you have déjà vu, you think you've done something before or been. So your brain has like, it's like almost, it's not true, but it's like it has filing cabinets.
Filing, okay.
You know?
Filing cabinet?
Like imagine your brain is like an office.
Okay.
And there's like a photocopier here and a bathroom there.
Okay.
So in your brain, there's filing cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them say long-term memories or memories from 2021 or whatever.
Okay.
And you can't remember where it is, but it was around here. So you start looking around and you say, oh, here it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're experiencing stuff like this class right now, you could go home and remember it. Or in 2 months, you can remember that's the time Jesse punched me in the face. Right? And I had to go to the hospital. Right?
Wow.
That could be. Yeah. Well, probably it's not going to happen, but that could be. in such cases, you could file that away into the pain department or whatever, right?
Okay.
So when you're experiencing stuff, your brain is constantly filing. It's taking things from here and putting them over there for later. And then it's forgetting the things that don't matter, like math and what your teacher said at school.
That stuff doesn't
matter. You don't need to file that away, your brain says. So what happens is, the theory is, maybe the thing that you're experiencing right now goes in a filing cabinet, but it's the wrong one. Mm. And you go to put it in, and it says, we already have this one. But you haven't actually had that one before?
Yeah.
And you say, why are there two copies of this? Like the little man in your head is like, why is there two copies of this? And then you say, that's really weird.
Yeah.
And then you forget about it.
Oh.
What do you think?
Oh, that's cool.
That's a good story, right?
Yeah.
I heard that story. I thought it was pretty good. We're practically done. And out of time. Well, I like this essay so far. Maybe we'll power through it really quick.
Yeah.
Let's try.
Okay.
Quite generally, someone who, with the same degree of clarity, speaks faster than his opponent will have a distinct advantage over him. The reason is that he is a fast talker, is leading to more troops into the field. When in examinations, that's tests.
Test.
One abruptly examines open-minded and well-educated people without introduction on questions like, what is the state? What is the property? One realizes how necessary it is that the mind be excited in a certain way for us to be able to recreate in our minds even thoughts that we have had before. The same people whom we examine in this way are found in a congenial, remember that one?
Oh, right, yeah.
Friendly.
Yeah.
Con means with, genial means kind. Are found in congenial company where the talk has been about questions of the state and property for a while, then perhaps these people would have no trouble through comparisons, contrasts, and summary of the concepts? Question marks. Concern to find acceptable definitions. But under examination conditions where the preparation of the mind is missing, one finds they falter. Only an ignorant examiner will conclude that they do not know. Yes, that's
falter?
True.
Falter?
Like screw up?
Oh.
Not it's like trying to climb a ladder and you miss a step.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For it is not we who know, it is a certain state of us that knows. That's a pretty good line. It's not we who know, it is a certain state of us. Yeah, so you wake somebody up in the middle of the night and you say, what's 17 minus 6? Why are you asking me? If they don't immediately wake up, open their eyes like this, I'd say 11. Then we say they don't know.
Yeah.
That's what this is saying.
Oh, okay.
Only truly vulgar spirits. Vulgar means like ugly, rude.
Okay.
People who have learnt by heart yesterday what the state is supposed to be and who have forgotten it tomorrow will have a ready answer. This is regular students who are good at memorizing. Perhaps there's no more inappropriate occasion to show oneself in a positive light than in a public examination. Test.
Yeah.
I disregard the fact that public examinations are disgusting and hurtful to the sensitive mind. I disregard the fact that it is provoking to be faced with a hack, who looks at our knowledge in order to decide whether to buy us if the number is 5 and to send us away if the number is 6?
6.
Maybe it's missing. It's very hard to play on the instrument of the human mind to elicit its proper sound from it. That's a nice metaphor.
Yeah.
The mind gets so easily out of tune under clumsy hands, so much so that the greatest connoisseur, that is a person who appreciates fine art or flavor or whatever, the consummate, that means very detailed, kind of like connoisseur, specialist in the midwifery of thoughts. You know what a midwife is?
No.
That's a woman, usually, who has had experience birthing babies and helping other women to birth babies.
Oh,
if you've never had a baby before, you're a bit worried about it.
Yeah.
Right? So you said, don't worry, we got a midwife. So she comes over and says, yeah, don't worry, you just squat down over there and do this. I'm going to get a towel and I'll be right back. And then, I'm feeling less worried. That's a midwife. So midwifery is the act of helping a baby be born. Consummate specialist in the midwifery of thoughts, as Kant calls it. Kant's a famous philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
I really like his thoughts. Might well commit serious mistakes with the young soul entrusted to him. What ensures good results for such young people, by the way, even the most ignorant amongst them, That is people who don't know nothing, right? Is the circumstance that the examiner's minds in the case of the public examinations are far too preoccupied to be able to pass a free judgment. Now, this requires more thought here and more articulation. Not only do they often feel the indecency, that means it's wrong, right, or, you know, whatever, of the whole procedure, it would be indecent enough to ask someone to open his purse before our eyes, but how much more indecent it is to ask him to open up his soul for examination. So you go up to somebody and say, let me see in your purse. And they're like, what? And then now I need to open up your brain and give me the answers. Oh. Wow, that's even more personal, right?
Yeah.
There's another thing. The examiners themselves have to pass a severe test in these examinations, and they may often thank the Lord, that is God, for being able to leave examinations without showing weaknesses that are greater, mm-hmm. perhaps, than those disclosed in the youth that has just emerged from the university and whom they have examined. And then there's a note here about where that story is from, which is kind of fun. I will maybe look that up. Pretty good essay. What do you think?
Yeah, I like this essay.
Yeah.
A lot of...
The guy shouldn't have killed himself.
Yeah.
He did pretty good.
Yeah, I want to learn more.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... What was it called? Like metaphors.
Yes, nice metaphors. Yeah. And of course that helps you think too, right?
Yeah.
Good metaphor, nice simile. Mm-hmm. Too bad about the bad translation.
Yeah.
And the formatting, but those can be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
It's good. And I think the reason we like it is not only is it well written, but there's probably some truth in it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so too. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's see if it fully recorded. Yep.
Oh, 1 hour.
And 53 minutes and 10 seconds.